Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to the Nationwide Discussion Hour on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. And today we are focusing once again on the issues of transitional justice. And of course we know this because we have a revitalized agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, which is being implemented. Although there are challenges and there are some delays, but we can see that some bodies institutions have been formed and in the process of working. And one of these bodies are the bodies that are connected to transitional justice. And we find them in some of the chapters of the peace agreement. And so as we are having a series of these discussions from time to time and every weekday on Tuesday, for the time being, we host different experts on the issues, on related issues to transitional justice. And today I'm happy to say that we have our guest online and who is an expert on the issues. I have online Dr. Baba Jallo, who is a former executive secretary of Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation, Reparations Commission. And let me welcome him first before I say more about his bio. Welcome, Dr. Baba Jallo, on the Miraya Nationwide Discussion. You can open your mic. Your mic is mute, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Gabriel. I'm happy to be here. I'm honored to be here to have this important conversation. Thank you.
Nice to have you. As I said at the beginning, Dr. Baba Jallo is a former executive secretary of Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation, Reparations Commission, and a position he held from February 2018 to February 2022, and he received his master's in liberal studies at Rutgers University in Kadem in Camden in 2005, and his PhD in African history from the University of California at Davis in 2011. His research interests include the history of colonial post-colonial Africa, transitional justice and truth commissions, and negotiation and conflict resolution. And he has a lot more, very impressive biography, of course, and of course, welcome to the Miraya Radio Talk Show and Nationwide Discussion. And so my first question is, like, being from Gambia, one of the countries that has undergone political transitions and may be experiencing relative political stability, what can you say about the role of truth, reconciliation and healing in terms of transitional justice?
Thank you very much again for the opportunity to have this conversation. I think transitional justice itself refers to the various processes and mechanisms that a society adopts in order to deal with the past human rights violations, as well as to create a better future for the country. So essentially, what I can say is that the Truth Commission itself is one of those mechanisms. We will have other mechanisms like constitutional review commissions, etc. But the Truth Commission, like the CTRH, for example, is designed to help South Sudan deal with the violations of the past, as well as craft a better future for South Sudan. And I think it's a very important mechanism to have. It will be very, very helpful in helping South Sudanese navigate the intricacies of the past, as well as, you know, chart a future for the country.
And of course, there are many aspects of that process. Of course, this commission has even foreign experts on board. They will be there, appointed by IGAD or African Union, and local experts in that. And of course, the process sounds complicated, and for the man on the street, it might be something new, but in terms of political dimension, political aspect, and the issue of accountability, from your experience, how easy is the acceptance of the truth healing and reconciliation processes from an African perspective, if we can have something in our African cultures that we can build on to support a political process like this?
Yes, so truth commissions like the CTRH are very complicated institutions. They are never accepted wholly by society. There will always be a minority, thankfully, that will say, this is all so-so, this is all to avoid justice. And they will hear all kinds of excuses to criticize it. But essentially, within the African situation, condition, as you say, you can have the truth commission, and there is an African Union transitional justice process that is designed to Africanize the concept, if you like, of transitional justice and truth commissions. And the African Union policy promotes the inclusion of traditional justice mechanisms. In all our African societies, we have these groups and societies and mechanisms that have been there for forever and that help in creating reconciliation, promoting reconciliation and peace in our communities. So the CTRH will be designed in such a way that it will tap into these traditional justice mechanisms to help its truth-seeking, reconciliation, and compensation processes. So the two are not mutually exclusive. They can cooperate, they will collaborate in order to make sure that the transitional justice process in South Sudan works well.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Baba, how do you view the process in terms of political will required to make truth, reconciliation and healing a success?
I know that there is a degree of political will. I think that more political will is needed to move the process forward faster. I know that the process is moving forward. Back in July and August of last year, 2025, I was in Juba for 2 months, and I had a lot of consultations with stakeholders, including government officials, parliamentarians, and civil society groups, as well as UNMISS and the UNDP, with a view to crafting a design, a model for the CTRH. And that was done successfully. So right now, they have all the instruments that they need to get this mechanism up and running. So the political will is there to some extent, but I think more political will is needed to move the process forward. I think the pace is a bit slow. As always, people are impatient. They want to have peace. They want to have reconciliation, and they want the victims to have justice and accountability and compensation. And so I would say that while there is a noticeable degree of political will, this can be increased on the part of the government, of the authorities, to make sure the process moves forward faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, with your vast experience in Africa and also other parts of the world, what does it practically entail, this process? Like, for example, do people have mechanisms that will encourage them to come forward and say, yes, this is something very nasty I have done and I want to confess it? Or are people invited or called to the carpet and say, hey, come here, you have done this, come us, tell us the truth and confess here? So how does it work?
Yeah, that's a very important question. And one of the supporting documents that I submitted to the government of South Sudan and the UNDP is a document on the procedural guidelines for the public hearing process at the CTRH. So what happens is, once the institution is set up, it will then send out invitations for victims and perpetrators, witnesses, to come forward and give statements, written statements or oral statements to the commission. So the commission will invite people to come forward and give statements, And once those statements are taken, they are then reviewed and investigated. And, you know, those that are seen to be credible or thought to be credible after the rigorous investigation and research process will then be invited. So essentially, the victims will be invited first. That is how it normally works. So you have victims come forward and testify. And when they come forward, there will be in place a victim participation policy. There will be in place a mechanism for protection of the victims' identities, do no harm approaches. It's a whole package that will be applied to the victims. And so when a victim testifies before the commission, inevitably the victim will say, Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so did this to me. They will name the alleged perpetrators who did the things, who inflicted harm on them. And then these alleged perpetrators will now be considered adversely mentioned persons. So once an adversely mentioned person is identified, the commission will then write or reach out to that adversely mentioned person to say, this is what the victims have said. How do you respond? And then once they respond, the commission will then decide to invite them, determine whether to invite them to come and testify or not. Now, according to the CTRA Act, the commission has powers of subpoena. They can summon a perpetrator to come forward. And if the perpetrator refuses to come forward, they could send police to arrest them and bring them forward. So then this is how the process would unfold. First, the victim will testify, and then they would name perpetrators, and the perpetrators will then be asked to verify whether they are guilty or not, or whether the accusations are right or not, and then they will be invited to come and testify. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the Commission Research and Investigations Unit would also be doing private investigations in the archives, in the newspapers, to identify witnesses and perpetrators who may then be invited to come and testify. So that is how the process unfolds.
Mm-hmm. The listeners to Radio Miraya, this is me, Gabriel Shadal, and this is a Nationwide Discussion Hour. And today, my guest, who is giving us insights into the process of transitional justice related to truth, reconciliation and healing, is Dr. Baba Jallo. And Dr. Baba Jallo is online from the Gambia, and he is now a member of and current chair of the African Union's Continental Reference Group on Transitional Justice in Africa. This is a very important position he's holding, but he's an expert also in the issues we are discussing here. And when it comes to South Sudan, he has been here, he's been doing the work in line of what we are discussing today. Now, let us look at, can you explain to us also, when does the reconciliation and healing come in?
Reconciliation and healing inevitably will follow the truth-telling. There has to be truth, and that truth can come from the victims, and they can come from the alleged perpetrators. Now, normally what happens is, in the case of the Gambia, for example, perpetrators will come, and fortunately we had perpetrators come forward voluntarily without any problems. That could not be, or that may not be the case in South Sudan, but where you have perpetrators come and accept responsibility for what they do, they normally would be given a chance to make a statement, and in that statement, what they would do sometimes is express remorse and then express a desire to reconcile with their victims. And once the perpetrator expresses a desire to reconcile with their victims, the victims would be notified and then asked if they want to reconcile. So the prerogative of reconciliation from person to person, victim-perpetrator reconciliation, comes from the victim. They would have to agree to reconciliation. At the same time, reconciliation goes beyond the individual level. You know, you can have reconciliation between communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That would be what would be extremely important in South Sudanese cases, in the South Sudanese case, considering the communal polarization, communal violence, communal conflict that's going on. So reconciliation at the communal level can also happen, and that would be mediated by the CTRH. At the same time, we went beyond, in the Gambia, we went beyond the conventional notions of reconciliation between individuals and communities to the reconciliation between perception and reality when it comes to the role and the status and the significance of government in society. So then we try to reconcile how the people see government and what the reality of government is. Because we know that in Africa, you know, there is a mismatch between people's understandings of government and the role of government and the power of government and the limits of government authority and the reality of the governments we have today as a nation-state republican system. So reconciling that perception and reality will also be an important aspect of the CTRH if it adopts the model that we are recommending.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, this issue of reconciling between perception and reality. And as many of the conflicts and many of the things that are happening, atrocities are mostly based on perception and what we also say as a stereotype and all this. Dr. Bamba, truth-telling can be painful, reviving many traumas and even risky. Then how does it work?
Exactly. It is a very risky process. And that is why a truth commission like the CTRH would have witness protection measures, do no harm policies and practices that we ensure that victims and perpetrators sometimes are also offered the kind of protection that they need. So the CTRH will have a witness protection policy. At the same time, truth-telling, as you say, can reopen old wounds. It can re-traumatize, and it normally would re-traumatize victims in particular. At the same time, it also offers a lot of healing because people are able to get closer if they know what happened to their loved ones, if they are able to come forward and say, this is what happened to me, this individual is the one that did this to me. So while there is re-traumatization, I think that the healing aspect of it is greater than the harm that is done to the public. If the truth doesn't come out, if people do not express their pain, if they do not say what happened to them, that pain will be bottled up in them and it will create a lot of psychosocial trauma. And that is why also, according to the recommendations and the documents, the structure that I recommended for the CTRH, you will have a victim support unit and a psychosocial support unit within the CTRH secretariat. And that would help offer psychosocial support and mental support to victims. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even perpetrators, because the whole society is traumatized. So that trauma also needs to be considered. But essentially, the bottom line is, yes, it is re-traumatizing, it is painful, but the healing powers of truth-seeking and truth-telling are more powerful, are more significant than the harm it offers. Mm-hmm. It causes in society.
Yes, yes. And of course, in Africa and many parts of the world, we had prolonged conflicts. And when people politically decide that they want to reconcile, they will set a time scope for their truce and reconciliation. And for the case of South Sudan, can you remind the listeners how far they can go back into history or and how upward they can go?
Well, yes. So in the CTRH Act, there is a clear limitation or delimitation of the time period that the commission will look at. And that is from July 2005, the signing of the Revitalized Peace Agreement. The signing of the Comprehensive
CPA.
Peace Agreement in
yes.
2005. Mm. Yes. And up to 2018, the signing of the Revitalized Peace Agreement for the conclusion, for the ending of the conflict in South Sudan. So it's a period of about 12 to 13 years that will be covered by the CTRH, or that is currently covered by the CTRH. there could be an extension because, as you can imagine, from 2018 to now, there might have been more violations that would need to be looked into. But as per now, as per the provisions of the City Alec Act, it starts from 2005 to 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and does it come after everything has stopped, like every conflict has stopped, literally and practically, or it can start even when there are small pockets here and there that are not stable?
Yeah, I think it can start. I mean, it doesn't have to wait to the end of the conflict. And one of the concerns that a lot of the stakeholders, including members of parliament, the Peace and Security Committee, for example, of the National Parliament in Juba, as well as other stakeholders in the UN and other parts of the international community, one of their concerns was, how can a truth-seeking process work within a conflict situation? Now, if you say we're going to wait to the end of the conflict, you don't know when the conflict is going to end. And so since there are large parts of the country that are reasonably peaceful, and since the ongoing conflict could be contained, it would be better to start now, to start as the conflict goes on. And then what happens is, in this condition, what I told them and the way we designed the CTRH mechanism is that the transitional justice process itself, or the truth-seeking process itself, or the truth-seeking mechanism itself, will be a vehicle for peacemaking and peace-building and reconciliation building. So you build structures and processes into the CTRH that will enable it to be a peace ambassador, if you like, to be a creator of peace in addition to a truth-seeking mechanism. So that is how we designed the process. So it doesn't have to wait till the conflict ends. Mm-hmm. It can start now. And if the model is adopted and if the processes are adopted, then the CTRH itself can be a peace-building mechanism in addition to being a transitional justice truth-seeking mechanism.
Yes, listeners, Radio Mirai, this is a nationwide discussion hour, and with me is Dr. Baba Jalou, who is an expert on the issues of transitional justice, and we are speaking in the context of South Sudan, and he's talking to me online from Gambia, and of course he has been to the country, has been engaged with the Truth, Healing and Reconciliation Commission here in the country and other partners, and for those who would like to engage, the numbers are 0912067879 and 0912068101, and the SMS line, of course, is 0912177141, and I'll be receiving your SMSs there after this short interlude.
السلام رسالتنا الوحدة هدفنا راديو ميرايا صوت السلام.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Yes, and we have our callers here. I'll be picking some callers. Hello. Hello.
Yes, good evening, Sadat, and good evening to the girls online from Gambia.
Good evening. Welcome.
Andrea Camilo Ongwam, Senfagao area.
Welcome, Andrea.
Yeah, Sadat, our country is now at mess. Mm. Where the recent 2018 agreement has been signed, part of it is not fully implemented, and conflict is still ongoing. Mm. As an expert now, what is the solution for conflict in this country? As an expert now, what is the solution to conflict of this country?
Okay.
As an expert from Gambia, which our politician will learn more and more to stop bloodshed in this country.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrea. Hello.
Yes, Sadat.
Yes, welcome.
Good evening, my brother and best friend at the same time.
Good evening, welcome. Who is calling?
This is me, Tolfuk.
Tolfuk, welcome.
I greet you there in the studio. And I greet the guest who is online.
Welcome.
From Zambia. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
Gambia, yes. Yes,
yeah. Yeah. First of all, I want to ask, is one of the South Sudanese politician?
He's not.
Oh.
He's an expert.
Okay.
Yes.
Because why I'm asking like this, because if they want a politician of South Sudanese, I can ask simple question. Mm. Because our politician, who is the South Sudanese, they are moving from the country and sit on our side, the country, and call for the peace. But the person who needs the peace can sit at home and call the children so that he can talk. Mm. And the children can listen from the elders. Mm-hmm. That is the real citizen.
Yeah.
But as we are the South Sudanese, our politician, they are talkative, and they are talkative. But the implementation is very, very, very low.
Yeah, I will pause this question, Solvok, because of time.
Another thing, accountability. If South Sudanese knowing the meaning of accountability, I think that there is no conflict in some part of the country. Mm-hmm. Now, else you are the part of the AU, African Union. Mm. As you come, I heard that you come twice here in South Sudan. Mm. In your observation, there is other parties need the peace to be with us in South Sudan. As you are the member of that union, what are your advice to the citizen of South Sudan so that you can petition for the 2026 election?
Thank you. Thank you, Dolfog from Awilda. Hello? A lot of noise on that line. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Hello, hi.
Yes, welcome.
How are you doing?
Tamam.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Mokunanai from Kibel.
Makoi. Welcome, Makoi. Makoi, we've lost you, Makoi. Sorry for that. Hello?
Yes,
hello?
Yes.
Yeah, marhaba. Welcome.
Yes, you are connected with James Dwar.
James Dwar, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I was interested in one point from the guest that the reconciliation should stay linked to the people. Mm. And this quote really touched my heart. And I don't know, since he has been in South Sudan, how will the leaders exercise the truth telling so that the perpetrators will really admit that we have gone wrong in this and ask for forgiveness if they, those who are affected by their wrongdoing really attempt to forgive them, then going forward on how the healing and reconciliation should take place.
Okay.
So
okay.
What is he really, or what is his role? Anyway, I can generalize it, since he is now at the level of Africa. Mm. Since African justice really relies on those who have money, how should that truth-telling tell us that you are now going to tell the truth, since you really depend on who right is need to be dig out?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, James Dwar. Another caller. Hello?
Yes, just there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, who's calling and from where?
I'm communicating to Karbi Namabur from Ulu.
Come again?
Karbi Namabur from Ulu.
Karbino from Ulu. Welcome.
Mm. Yes, I appreciate the program.
Yes.
And what is taking place now, the South Sudanese are confusing. Because the peace that's been signed on... 2018 up to now, so the implementation was not done, but especially the security arrangement. So the healing and the reconciliation is supposed to be the last. Now I'm asking our guests online to tell us exactly which mechanism which he told to those people which is fighting currently. How are they going to be reconciled or healing? because the implementation from that time up to now, nothing paperless.
Thank you very much, Garbino from Wulu in Lakes State. Hello?
Hello, Gabriel Shara.
Yes, welcome.
Okay, Michel Kher.
Michel Noor.
Yeah. Not Philip Juma.
Philip Juma, متصل من وين Philip?
أنا متصل في جوبا.
مرحب.
سؤال بتاعي جورا لزول بتاع زامبيا مبروك على ليلة عشان أنا بيكون ناس بتاع زامبيا. فأنا بكلم بيها قبل الجلسة الصدار أنا ركبت الله في فيش أجرمين. فأنا دير زول بتاع زامبيا عشان جاي دام أنا هنا في جوبا. فكل أجاتا الكان أليمون دير ده. Kelimo ni hiki viga zaman bitumo ni ya. Ikulu zaman bia ala ana guweri kalam bita. Rapatalai tisha agirime ni asena hiki amul implementation umu ni wen. Kwa asa deana ya asa fidaki lijuba. Si atu tija asa, si yomi atu ya umu ni. Hija asena nina bubada kalam. Dekaba na ajia dema buoni. Susha kita asena. Tarawai de asena nasi hiki amul implementation. Aja albukara bitinu bide asena nasarif.
Okay. Shukran. Shukran, Philip. Philip is asking an interesting question in Arabic. That he's saying, when are you coming here? So that we just do this thing. We are waiting eagerly to start this process. A very interesting question. So let me ask, give a chance to another caller. Hello?
Hello, I'm Mariah Abraham.
Yes, welcome.
This is Gabriel Chimot from Chaibet County.
Welcome, Gabriel. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm appreciating the program, and I want to ask the guests in the studio, though he's in Zambia. My question is that, is African Union or IGAD, are they neutral in the conflict of South Sudan, or are they part of it? That is my question.
Okay.
If they are neutral, why there were five vice presidents assigned and there is nowhere in the world where these activities are, number one. Number two, as they talk of implementation, we had, and even the county where I am now, it was actually assigned to IO, though there were no members or more members from IO, but it was agreed as it was assigned in a repatriate fees agreement, which implementation is more needed, more than people. If they were the one to instruct South Sudanese to be up well, they have to come in and ask who is the problem, by the way, and then they have to make consultation with the communities at the grassroots, not at the politician level. Politicians have gone out of hand in the South Sudan. But IGAD, I accuse IGAD, maybe they have had in the conflict. If they were neutral, all these positions created and whatever now is the one.
But your politicians also accept it because they won't share in power. Everybody needs power in the country.
Yeah.
Can you blame okay. IGAD for that? Because everyone wants a share of the cake of power and it is free. You negotiate and you are given.
When they negotiate, they are actually victimizing the community. We on the ground here, we are the suffering of the that agreement.
But your politicians accepted that.
All these positions they have created, they are not helpful to South Sudanese.
Okay, good. I hope they will hear that. Thank you very much, the caller from Chaibet. Very interesting interaction there, Dr. Baba Jallo. And let me pick this caller and then I get back to you. Hello? Hello?
Yes, Big Brother Joseph Shadar.
Yes, who's calling?
This is William, calling Rumbek.
Well, William from Rumbek, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Big Brother. Yeah. So the program is very interesting and I wish to share. Yeah, our guest mentioned something very clear that in peace agreement need two spelling. And there is where I got my question. So if there are no people who say the truth, then what will be the other alternative that people will do to address the conflict within the country? Is there another mechanism?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for that. And let me go back to my guest online, Dr. Baba. Yes, a lot of questions, interesting perspectives there. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Gabriel. Very, very interesting questions. Some of them I'm afraid I can't answer. For example, I am not an official of the African Union.
Yes.
And so I am a member of the Transitional Justice Reference Group, and that is an advisory body that advises the African Union on transitional justice, and that helps, offers technical support to African Union member countries if they need advice and technical support on transitional justice. So I'm not an official of the African Union per se, and so I'm not able to answer questions such as whether the AU and IGAD are neutral in the conflict, or any conflict, any question related to the conflict, unless it has to do with the transitional justice process in South Sudan. That said, I think one of the questions that might be relevant, that are relevant to the transitional justice process in South Sudan, is I think the first or second question as to what would be a way of ending the conflict in South Sudan. I think one of the conflict and negotiation principles in conflict and negotiation literature or practice is that we all know that all South Sudanese have a common interest. There has to be something that everyone is invested in South Sudan. And the first of those, of course, is the national identity, South Sudan itself. Everyone, every South Sudanese, regardless of which part of the conflict you are on, regardless of your religious or ethnic affiliation or gender, you love South Sudan. We all love South Sudan. So that is one common point of interest that South Sudanese can work on and converge upon to craft a peace, lasting peace for South Sudan. The other is, I think, that a lot of people would be interested in the truth about what happened. Now, the South Sudanese situation is unique in that the members of those in authority, for example, have a stake in the transitional justice process. So that makes it very, very tricky for them to come around to actually implementing the truth-seeking process, because some of the truths that would come inevitably will implicate some of the people that are in authority. But that is something that has to be anticipated and that has to be accommodated, because there is no choice for the people of South Sudan but to face the past, the human rights violations, to deal with them truthfully, to look at the mirror of transitional justice, acknowledge their mistakes, agree on, the way forward. Seek apologies, apologize if necessary, reconcile and move forward. There simply is no option for the people of South Sudan but to come around the table and have a conversation. They have a common interest in South Sudan, they have a common love for South Sudan, and the other thing that they have a common interest in or widely shared interest is peace. Everyone loves peace, everyone needs peace. Whether they want peace or not, they still need peace. So the love for South Sudan and their need for peace would be a way of bringing South Sudanese people together to the truth-seeking table and then move the country forward. There is also the question of why truth-telling is essential. Like I just said, it's the same thing. The South Sudanese people have to come to the table. They have to have a conversation. A transitional justice process, and in particular, a truth-seeking process, is a national conversation. And as a national conversation, that means that every single South Sudanese should be part of the conversation. So you cannot have a national conversation without having all parties to the South Sudanese interest to be part of that conversation. So essentially, creating reconciliation, creating a truth-seeking mechanism would all revolve around the idea that the truth-seeking process is a national conversation, and therefore, one, it has to be inclusive. Inclusivity at various levels that are outlined, of course, in the model that I also presented to the government of South Sudan. It has to be transparent. But more importantly, the truth-seeking process has to be credible from start to finish. In transitional justice, and in particular in truth-seeking, there is no room for error. You have to have a solid foundation. The process would have to be credible. It would have to have integrity. It would have to be inclusive. It would have to be transparent from start to finish. So essentially, all of the questions that have been raised in terms of the TJ process, as well as to some extent the conflict situation in South Sudan, would revolve around these principles. Inclusivity, transparency, credibility, integrity of the process from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. If you have one single mistake in the beginning, it could affect the whole process from start to finish.
Yes, Dr. Baba, we are concluding, we have doubting Thomas, as we say, but also generally, people are sometimes skeptical of things they have not experienced before. They don't know it before. And they would like to hear, where has it worked before so that we can follow it?
Well, it worked in Gambia, certainly. It worked very well in Gambia. And that essentially is because, one, the commission was independent. You cannot have the government interfering in a truth-seeking process. Once that happens, the process will be compromised. So the CDRH Act provides that the CDRH will be an independent institution. And the mechanisms have to be solid. You have to create solid mechanisms, you know, and you have to have inclusivity. You have to have transparency. And the entire process from start to finish has to have credibility. So Gambia was a success story. It's a success story. Now, the Gambian TRRC, Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission, is now considered a model of successful truth-seeking in Africa and in the world. You can say South Africa, to some extent, was also a success. It provided a model that Gambia and others built on. And so, you know, these two truth commissions were successful. And I believe that if the South Sudanese process is done properly, it will succeed and it will be a model for other countries emerging out of conflict to adopt in the future. But it has to be done right from start to finish. There is no room for mistakes. There is no room for official meddling in the process. The process has to be credible. The commissioners would have to be people of integrity. They would have to have the right institutions in place at the secretariat. And the entire process just have to be flawless, if you like. Of course, there would be issues here and there. But at the end of the day, you know, drawing from examples like the Gambia, for example, and South Africa, South Sudan can have a successful transitional justice process.
Mm-hmm. Really, thank you very much, Dr. Baba Jallo, who is a member and current chair of the African Union's Continental Reference Group on Transitional Justice in Africa, and also is having a lot of work doing here with the Truth, Reconciliation and Healing processes in South Sudan. Thanks very much for your valuable contribution, and at least you have given us that this Truth and Reconciliation and Healing can work, and you gave example of your own country and also of South Africa. And maybe South Sudan will be the next, and we hope that South Sudan will be the next in having a successful the reconciliation and healing, which is also about the truth saying. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Baba Jallo.
You're welcome, Gabriel, and thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation. I look forward to joining you again in the future.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And that is the end of today's discussion hour on a nationwide program on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. Thanks for listening.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.